Hello, you are listening to Omnitalk's Retail Fast Five, brought to you in partnership with the A&M Consumer and Retail Group, Avalara, Wiliot, TGW, and Sezzle. Ranked in the top 10% of all podcasts globally and currently ranked the number one podcast in all of retail by FeedSpot, the Retail Fast Five is the podcast that we hope makes you feel a little smarter, but most importantly, a little happier each week, too. Today is March 6, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, San Mazinga.
And I am Chris Walton.
And we are here once again to discuss the most important headlines from the past week that highlight how the physical, digital, and human elements of retail are coming together to shape the future. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and you know what I love about your read is I love the word Wiliot. I think no offense to any of our other sponsors, but I just love saying that word Wiliot. It's just so much fun.
Is it just like whimsical for you, or what is it about it?
It just makes me smile every time you say it. Like, and that's part of the job of this podcast is to make people feel smarter and a little happier. And it makes me happy every time I hear Wiliot. I think it's just a cool word. It's just got a good sound to it. And
no wonder you were so excited when we interviewed Wiliot yesterday. We got a good podcast coming out from them. But that must have been why there was the perma grin on your face during the whole
there recording. Was, and it was a super cool conversation too. Yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, we might as well just segue into that. Yeah. Like what cool content. Yeah. We've got a great interview with Wiliot, a gentleman from Wiliot coming up. We're going to talk about Bluetooth enabled tracking, which is all the rage, especially at places like, yeah, I think like Walmart is, you know, been active with it publicly and others too. So it's very good conversation. But and you know, the thing I wanted to highlight to start the show.
Yeah.
This is our 1,000th episode. Can you believe that?
What?
1,000 episodes. Yes.
How did I not know this?
Well, you know, I keep that kind of stuff to myself and kind of spring it on you and surprise
I feel like
you.
We
you know,
should
being
have
the
like,
more analytics guy of
there
of
should
the
be
duo.
Like more like celebration. My job to like bring the celebration and fun to the party. Like I should have known this so that I could like we could have some like exploding noises or like,
yeah,
you know, like horns. Yeah.
Toast some tequila or something, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. But you know, but I've got the usual Starbucks today. So, but yeah, but no, 1,000. I can't believe this. And for those that don't remember, Anne, our first podcast was recorded in my basement at the encouragement of our good friend, Carter Jensen, who's now at General Mills. He's gone off to much bigger and better things than sitting down and talking with us every week.
For sure.
March of 2018, I think that was roughly, if I remember right, when we did the first one. The audio was terrible. It was originally just me talking, you know, and then we did the whole thing called the After the Five. For those that have been with us that long, we did like, I did like the Fast Five breakdown and did the After the Five. And we realized that people liked the conversation with us all back and forth. And that's how this whole thing started. And
yeah,
and we've never looked back since. So it's
we
been.
We haven't. Not so once.
No, yeah. We look around sometimes, but never back. but thanks to everyone that supported us throughout this whole thing. And, you know, we're just so appreciative of it. 1,000 episodes is a big accomplishment.
I feel like we should have medals. I'll work on that. I'll work on getting something to celebrate the 1,000th Omnitalk Retail episode. That's so cool. Well, we're also handing out more hardware today, Chris, because today is our monthly OmniStar Award, who we give
Woohoo!
To someone very, very special. Also somebody that's supported our work from the start. And as a reminder, for those of you who are not familiar with our OmniStar Award, it's our monthly opportunity to recognize an individual in the retail industry. We give it out in partnership with Corso to recognize the very best of the best omnichannel operators who are doing the most incredible work. For those of you not familiar with Corso, they are an AI co-pilot that coaches retail leaders how to optimize store performance at every level. You can transform retail operations from data overload into data powered. Great partner, and really thankful that we have them with us to give this month's OmniStar Award to...
Drumroll, please. And pretend there's a drumroll because I'm terrible at it.
The one, the only, Dave Steck, the VP of IT and Application Development at Schnucks. Chris, what do you have to say to our friend and now OmniStar, Dave Steck?
Yeah, this one is a long time coming. We were looking for the right opportunity to do it. I've known Dave now for 3 or 4 years since I first interviewed him at, I think it was Shop Talk or Grocery Shop. I don't even remember. I've interviewed him a couple times at those shows now. And he's become, the reason I'm proud to give this award to him is he's become my go-to for pressure testing, or he's become my barometer for, okay, how am I thinking about this? What am I missing? What are the puts and takes with this technology as you think about it working in a retail store environment particularly? And Dave is the best, most candid person I know that's going to share his thoughts. I don't always agree with him, and yes, he knows that, but we have a lot of mutual respect for each other. And so I am super proud to recognize him for this award, which is also a testament to all the great work that Schnucks has done over these past few years, as we've highlighted multiple times on this show. But Anne, why is it so special for you?
Well, I agree with everything that you said. I think we are choosing also our 1000th episode to recognize you, Dave, because you've been mentioned in quite a few of our episodes. Like, we always go back to, what is Schnucks doing and how have they really been the innovation leader in grocery? And that requires a lot of hard work and dedication and cultural movement, I think, among that team to make sure that you're getting everybody to rally around this new technology that they've deployed so well in stores. So, Dave, I hope you're raising a very special, like, butterfly pea powder extract cocktail to yourself with this award. Sending all of us the recipe for that beautiful cocktail. But Chris, with that, I think it's time for us to get to the headlines.
I think so too. And let's also not lie, Dave's a loyal listener. And if you're a loyal listener, the chances of you being an Ami star just go up tenfold, right, Anne? I mean, Let's call it what it is. But
100%.
All right. But before we get to the headlines, of course, today's headlines are also brought to you by Shop Talk. And we've got some big news because, Anne, who doesn't love a crazy fun fact? And I've got one that I want you to hear today. And that is that, unbelievably, Anne, when I thought about this, I almost lost my you know what. But Shop Talk is just 10 days away. 10
what?
Days. Everyone you want to meet will be there. 10,000 of retail's best people are going to be there.
Remember when it was 3,000 people?
It feels like yesterday. I mean, that's how long we've been doing this. 1,000 shows, plug. Go see the list online. It's incredible. Every brand you'll want to hear from will be on the Shop Talk stage, bringing you insight that you need to stay ahead in 2024. There's 225 speakers lined up, 10 keynotes, the CEO of Macy's. I cannot wait for that. Bed Bath & Body Works, Canada Goose, Kohl's, as well as senior execs from Walmart, PepsiCo, Nordstrom, and Coach. Every piece of tech you ever wanted to explore will be on display from nearly 1,000 industry leaders like DoorDash, Google, Meta, Shopify, Synchrony. I'll be kicking off the show on Monday with a keynote discussion with Google's Maria Renz, too. So you're going to want to see that. And we will also be there closing out the show on Tuesday. On what day is it, Anne?
Wednesday
with a live podcast with the Shop Talk team. And most importantly, there's a very special guest headlining the annual Whiteout Beach Party, the one and only. And I know you're excited for this. Go ahead.
Oh my
you
God.
Do the honors, please. Who's it going to be, Anne?
Ludacris.
Yes, Ludacris. Oh man, I can't wait to see him coming off the Super Bowl. It just doesn't get any better than Shop Talk. So go, grab your ticket. You've got 10 days to get yourself to Vegas and only 2 days until tickets go to full price this Friday. Remember, retailers and brands can use our promo code OmniTalk to save an extra 10% off current rates, which are still discounted until Friday. So if you don't have your ticket, go get it now. Google Shop Talk to learn more. All right. Today, we've got news on Target's new membership program called Target Circle 360. The RealReal is pushed to open more stores. Sam's Club opening a new design thinking studio. And Whole Foods plans to debut a new small format store concept. But we begin today with what was huge news last week, at least for part of the week, from Wendy's. Yeah. Anne.
There was a lot of back and forth going on with this one. So we've got it all covered in this headline. But Chris, headline number one is that Wendy's announced that it planned to use, quote, this is important, quote, surge pricing, end quote, last week and quickly changed its approach amid backlash. According to LA's KTLA5, Wendy's is trying to put a different spin on what its CEO meant when he told investors that the fast food giant would introduce, quote, dynamic pricing, end quote, to its menus. During the February 15th earnings call, Wendy's CEO Kirk Tanner said that, quote, beginning as early as 2025, we'll begin testing more enhanced features like dynamic pricing and daypart offerings, along with AI-enabled menu changes and suggestive selling, end quote. a statement that many took to mean that Wendy's would increase or decrease prices based on demand, similar to rideshare services like Uber. All of which prompted anger as many customers took to social media to express their disgust. In response to the backlash, Wendy's instituted a statement to the Associated Press saying, quote, Wendy's will not implement surge pricing, which is the practice of raising prices when demand is highest. We didn't use that phrase, nor do we plan to implement that practice, end quote. Chris, this is a big one. A
lot of meat on that bone, Ann. A lot of meat
on the bone. Chris, this is also A&M's put you on the spot question yet again. First headline, A&M wants to know, Chris, as we've been discussing with ESLs and day part pricing and grocery, it seems like the expansion of dynamic pricing will be highly correlated with the tech to allow it. Chris, where do you think retailers can potentially go wrong in its usage if they're not careful?
Ooh, great question. Okay, so a lot here, a lot of meat on this bone, a lot of the bone of these headlines. This is a good week for headlines. All right. So first off, I got to say this is already the strong front runner for biggest CEO slip up of the year. Like I think it's gonna be hard for someone to beat Mr. Tanner. Was that his name, man? Tanner.
Kirk Tanner. It sounds like a character from like Step by Step or something.
Or ABC. Star Trek or something. I don't know.
TGIF.
But yeah, definitely the front runner. So, I mean, you just don't start flapping your gums about this. Like, even if you're thinking about it, you don't start talking about it publicly. And so the A&M question is good in that context because, you know, despite talking about it, I've never been a big fan or believer in real-time pricing in store, like actual real-time changing of pricing. I think the technology is potentially there to do it now, but I've never been a fan of it. I have been a big fan of day part promotions.
Yeah.
And for that reason, I think until retailers understand it, if you're thinking about doing that, you should only be taking your prices down to spur demand. You should never be taking them up to capture increased profit during the moments of high demand, a la surge pricing, which is what Uber does. And if you think about it, surge pricing got the best of Uber this weekend when we got home because it was $80 for an Uber to our house. And we're like, why are we doing this? Let's go take a cab. And it costs half as much.
Right.
And so that's the risk that Wendy's runs here. And the other point I would make too, which I don't remember who told me this, but I know they're listening to the show and they'll remember the conversation. And they told me that the key thing with ESLs is actually not that you can move the prices up really quickly. It's actually that you can keep them down in competitive response on things like eggs and milk, because those are the things where you lose loyalty.
Yes.
And so that's the type of actions I would be trying to take with this concept of day part pricing. It'd be giving more promotions, should that be in your business model, to your guests when they want them, not trying to get the most profit extracted from them to your benefit. That's how I think about it. But Ann, I'm curious, because when Wendy's broke this story, I was like, oh man, I can't believe they said this. They're venturing into weird territory. It's dangerous ground. And you kind of disagreed with me at the time. And we had a little bit of discussion. So where is your head now? Have you kind of thought about this differently? Or are you kind of like, no, let's do it. Surge it, you know, control that menu board.
No, I mean, here, look, this is what my thoughts are on this. I think as a business, dynamic pricing and digital menu boards, which is what Kirk Tanner should just have gone with, like dynamic pricing and promotions should have been part of that conversation. Digital menu boards so that we can rotate menu items more. Like there's so much more that you get based on this tech investment that will be good for all of the people on that earnings call to hear, that's what I would have highlighted like this. I mean, retailers like Starbucks have been doing like promotion and day part promotions during off-peak hours to come in for BOGO coffee and stuff for as long as I can remember. It's been really popular the last couple of years. And I think that this is a smart business investment. Retailers should be able to flex up and down to accommodate things like drawing in new consumers. And I do kind of feel like it's not the worst thing. Like in my mind, here's what I'm imagining. Like price, you could do some price, not surges, but you could do dynamic pricing during like a late night. If you're going to keep your Wendy's window open until 2 a.m. or something, and you need to staff that and you need to pay people more money to work later hours so that you can be open later, like I don't know. I'm not opposed to them having the flexibility to inflate those prices a little bit to keep people open, like to keep the demand open there. I don't think it makes sense, you know, during all hours of the day, but I really think that the core problem here is that the CEO used language that inferred they were going to be doing surge pricing. We'd learned from Uber, it's not a term that you can use. Even Uber has pulled back on surge pricing because of the customer dissatisfaction with it. But I still feel like it's not as bad as I think everybody's making it out to be. Yes, customers don't want to pay more for things, but look, there's a reality of to the economics of how things are getting to you, how deliveries are made in 15 minutes. Like, customers are going to have to start paying for this, whether they like it or not.
Yeah. Okay. So we don't need to go into this too much, but it did sound like you're talking a little bit out of both sides of your mouth there a little bit, you know? So I think that the key thing to me though, is what is the competitive response? Right. And what are the competitive options? Right. And that's where, you know, we talked about too, like, you know, if I know that even in your example, like if I know, this is what I was worried about. We talked about this a little last week too. Like if I, as a consumer, know that Wendy's is going to take advantage of me at late night, I'm not going to go there. I'm going to go somewhere else. And there's a lot of options in that arena. Whereas like with Uber, you know, if that's how you want to get your cab, there's not as many options readily available to you, especially in some markets now, given the impact that Uber's had on the number of available cabs.
Yeah. But
anyway,
then
I'll give you the last word.
Lyft is doing that too. Like Uber did surge pricing. Lyft is doing surge pricing the same way that McDonald's, Burger King, any of these other places implement surge pricing as well. And the part for me that I don't like about this,
you just don't want your consumers to know about it. That's what you're saying,
but
right?
I also feel like consumers, look, there's a cost to have a store open until 2 o'clock in the morning. There's a labor costs that are going
there
up.
Is.
Minimum
there
wages
is.
Are going up. Like, yes. I hate to break it to you consumers, but you don't get everything at that baseline price. Like there's going to have to be changes the same way we're seeing with inflation in the grocery stores. Like, I don't know. I can get your points, but I just think that
somebody's
going to have to pay for it.
I can't wait to see. I do think there's the point of like, how do you start doing this? Right. And even if you want to go that route, there's a correct way to probably start doing this versus just going all in on it too. Right. But I think, you know, this is why we do the headline shorts. You know, I can't wait to put this headline short out there and see, you know, who agrees with points we're making on either side, who disagrees. Cause Rick, I don't know. And I think you're right. The technology's there to do it. So it's interesting. Yeah. All right, let's keep moving. Headline number two. Target has launched a new paid membership called Target Circle 360. According to CNBC, the subscription tier, Target Circle 360, will include unlimited free same-day delivery for orders over $35 in as little as 1 hour with no delivery fees and 2 free-day shipping, along with other perks. The paid membership tier will launch in early April and initially cost $49 per year. It will cost $99 per year after the company's promotional period, which ends May 18th. Customers who have a Target Circle credit card will be able to pay the lower price of $49 per year beyond that. Target also said that it plans to relaunch its free Target Circle loyalty program, which debuted in 2019, to make it easier to use and more personalized. For example, members who belong to the free program will have discounts automatically applied rather than having to scan through deals on the app. These moves also come as Target posted its first annual year-over-year sales decline since 2016. An important note. And my question for you is this. I said about a month ago that how enticing this membership rollout is would be a barometer for Target's new marketing leadership. Have they hit it out of the park, or are you left wondering why I need to pay $99 a year for Target Circle 360?
I guess I have a lot of questions here. I think first it comes down to basic relationship economics. Mm-hmm. I give you X, you give me Y in return. In this case, I give you $99 a year and you give me free 2-day shipping and same day delivery on orders over $35. But here's the question I have. Like, this is not comparable to Walmart and Amazon's programs, even a little bit. Like, if you pay $99 or $139 respectfully, you get a lot of benefits for that program. You get gas discounts, you mm-hmm. get Paramount Plus discounts. Mm-hmm. And I just, to me, this just feels like a rebranding of Shipt, really. Like Shipt is $99 a year.
That's what I was going to ask you. It is, right? Like you had this opportunity already just to buy a Shipt membership, right? I mean,
right. There, and the Red Card benefits, I think here, like again, for Red Card holders, like yes, cutting the rates, the yearly rate in half for Red Card holders is great. I think the things I like about it are being able to have deals automatically added to your app. Like I think they're thinking about that in terms of enhancing the overall like process and involvement that you need as a consumer to be able to get some of the deals that they're talking about, but it's still not enough for me. And I'm a little surprised that they moved to release this, especially since they're already behind Walmart and Amazon with these subscription programs. I'm a little surprised that they didn't leverage their target brand equity to get some more partnerships involved in here before they went live with the launch. But what are your thoughts on it?
I agree. It feels rushed for that reason, 100%. And the other point I want to ask you too is like, do you think it's going to be the growth vehicle that Target expects it to be? Because they're also touting this as the growth vehicle for 2024. I mean, what's your take on that before I kind of give you my thoughts? I'm curious what you think there.
I mean, we've always said, right? Like if you can get people to pay $99 a month, that's right. Fine. But they've been able to pay $99 a month for Shipt for the last however many years,
right,
since 2018 or whenever they acquired Shipt. Like, and Shipt hasn't seen the growth that they thought it would. So I guess I'm curious here, like where they're going to see that growth, what's going to really drive that for Target without these
right.
added benefits.
So you're skeptical of it too. Yeah, I am. Yeah, I think the growth actually might come from just the rebrand of the automated discounts in the Circle program itself. Like that's something we've long wanted. You and I both have talked about how great that would be. Now, we don't understand the dynamics of that, of somebody that actually does it. And I think it's very imitatable too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if Target can do it, so can everyone else. It's pretty straightforward. So if it starts working, it's going to be short-term growth and the market will recalibrate, but it could work. But to your point about the membership fee, I 100% agree with you. I mean, the first thing that stood out to me is like, okay, what do you get for this? Mm-hmm. And is it really worth it? Like you get, like you said, no gas, no streaming service, nothing else cool. The other point I would bring up, but I thought this was really interesting too, is doesn't Target already have Drive Up? So I don't get the value equation here. So if you read the headlines yesterday, curbside pickup is what spurred their digital growth in Q4. Mm-hmm. And so Target thinks now that a costly same day delivery benefit will be a boon to growth when the sales numbers in total are still down year over year. Mm-hmm. How does that line up? Less people are shopping Target now, and Target is asking those fewer amounts of people to pay more for a service that they can go to the store and do themselves and not pay for, i.e. via Drive Up. So like, my question for you is, Aaron, when I put it in that context, would you pay $99 a year to not do curbside pickup? Like,
no.
I don't think it makes sense, right?
I don't think so. I mean, I think that you have your demographic of core Shipt same day delivery people who this is a pattern and behavior that they've developed. But I don't think that it's, again, like, what are you giving me for $99? I don't think that there's a value there. And I, you know, Chris, I was trying to think, I'm like, what if I was still at Target, what were some things that I could easily add onto this that wouldn't give an extra cost for Target to implement?
Right.
Like there's a few things that I thought of right off the bat, like priority access to design partnership launches, like
right.
do as a paid subscription Target mm-hmm. Circle 360 member, do I get early mm-hmm. access to those brand, you know, the DVF launch? Mm-hmm. Do I get priority curbside pickup? Like, is there the possibility that my orders could be bumped to the top of the list to be mm-hmm. fulfilled earlier? Like, do I get early store hours for post holiday clearance deals? Like, are there exclusive Target.com events, access to Target? Like, there's all these things that Target's doing. It's like, how can you tie it in to just like, bolster that.
And in fairness to Target, it's not a static offering, right?
No.
And I think it was even alluded to some degree that this may not be done. They may still be, putting more benefits into this. And God, I hope so. But, even the economics of it, like even if you get a certain portion of your membership base to trade into this at $49 or $99, if you're trading out that for a curbside drive up order, the economics of that are not going to pay off very well over time either, right. because right. that's a much more expensive way to fulfill. So yeah, this to me feels, it feels 100% rush. It feels in response to the performance. The other point I didn't see today is they said they're going to grow the business by, I think it was like $50 billion in the next 10 years. And I'm just like, we got to dive. I saw that this morning. We got to dive into that
new
too.
Stores,
300 new stores and how they're going to get that. I mean, they're not even at $100 billion yet in the last 10 years too. So that's a pretty big growth rate. And I just don't understand where that's coming from. So a lot more to come here. It's always a fun topic, but yeah, let's keep rolling, man.
All right. Headline number three, Chris, The RealReal is planning to open more stores. According to the Wall Street Journal, the luxury reseller is preparing to open up to three stores throughout the year with the aim of expanding its current footprint of 12 stores to 30 in the next few years. The San Francisco-based company wants to attract more owners of items of prestige brands from companies such as Kering or LVMH as the key to its business model, and is aware that many of them would feel more comfortable going to a physical store to get advice on a sale from an on-site luxury manager. The new stores would be different from those located in New York's Soho neighborhood, the executive said. The company is looking to set up smaller sites of a size around 2,500 square feet in wealthy but more local neighborhoods. Chris, what are your thoughts on this move from RealReal?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be quicker and even more candid at the point than I normally am, because I know you have a lot of thoughts on this that I definitely want to hear too. And I haven't talked to you that much about it in advance of the show, but you know, my quick take is I've long loved what the RealReal is doing ever since we saw their store, I think at NRF back in like
years ago,
2018. And I just loved it. But the one thing I would say about it was the Soho stores particularly were way too big.
Yeah.
And I don't think you need the make of them. You don't need the boutique merchandised, the boutique nature of the merchandising like it was there, right? Because the people that want the value of a real resale watch or a piece of clothing, they know why they're going there. You're going there to get the value, right? So you don't need to put the make in your stores. They can be smaller and you can reinvest that money into more ROI producing activities to drive sales. And I also think the other point about this is stores give you accessibility, right?
Yes.
It's not just an online interaction. You can go and get the confidence of the tactile experience of seeing what are essentially luxury products in the flesh. And I don't think that can be discounted. And I would tell you too, Ann, last point I'd make, if we had a RealReal down the street in the mall close to us, I think I would stop in at least once a month to check out what's in there just to see, you know, maybe pick up a gift for somebody, pick up a gift for myself. You know, I think I would do that. So I think this is a really smart move.
Yeah, I do too. I think this is a brilliant move when we're starting to look at the decline of a lot of the major, you know, Barney's, Neiman's, Saks, like that business kind of going along the wayside or stores closing. And you start to see even places like Macy's really going heads down into luxury. And this to me is like bringing Neiman's as a concept for the secondhand market to the population. And I think, unlike Neiman's or Saks or Barney's, now you're pulling from a much larger demographic because those price points aren't starting as high as they were for luxury items. And I think this is what's really going to help the RealReal scale, both from a place to acquire new goods, but also for the in-person shopping that they mentioned. So I went to one of these RealReal stores in Newport Beach, Chris, when I was of the smaller format stores. They have one, I forget what the neighborhood, it's very posh, but I went to one of these stores, line out the door the whole day. The entire day, there's a line out the door with a security guard, like letting people in and out. It was a small format, couldn't have been more than 2,000 square feet. And you're right, like very bare bones fixtures. They do not need crazy fixtures because the products are beautiful. Like they highlight themselves. It was handbags in one area on a shelf, jewelry in a basic case out front, you know, men's on one side, women's on the other side, like there does not have to be much to this, but the store was packed and people were like buying stuff like I could not believe. And so I think that, you know, this is an experience where you're right. People shop repeatedly. They're there once a month. they like to be able to, especially when you're spending a luxury price point on some, on an item, you want to be able to see it in real life. So I think this is a great way for RealReal to continue this expansion and to kind of bring themselves back into relevance. And the last thing I would say, I want to see, they also mentioned some tech and automation investments here. Mm-hmm, and this is a key area we were talking about last week about kind of that one-to-one video clienteling too. Like, how do you have a Zoom meeting with somebody at the store in Newport Beach? And like, if you can't make it
a central location,
store,
even, yeah.
Now you have up to 30 locations where you could be running this service versus, you know, just the one website or just the the store in Soho. So I think there's a lot of potential here that I really, really love about this move.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it brings to mind what I've said on the show before too. There's always a relationship between service and margin. Higher margin you have, the more service you can provide. And the key thing for RealReal in this equation is to think about what is the actual level of service that they need to provide given who they're selling to and what they're selling and why people are going there. And it's probably not as much as your brain would typically think it should be. And that's the golden opportunity here, because this starts to become a little more like the Southwest model, where you're giving a low price and giving the illusion of better service just because of what you're selling. So, which is a classic business school case too. And those types of business models are very rare to find. So, all right, very cool. And I love that. Great points. Headline number four, Sam's Club is opening a new design thinking studio. According to Chain Storage, the company is opening a 37,000 square foot design thinking studio called Clubhouse on the Sam's Club's corporate campus in summer of 2024. That was three seasons in a row, Anne. First announced in 2022, the studio, when completed, will serve as an innovation engine where the retailer will test products and design new enhanced experiences for customers and associates. Quote, I'm proud that Sam's Club stands out among retailers deploying the latest technologies, making members and associates' lives more convenient and meaningful, Todd Garner, interim chief product officer at Sam's Club, said in a corporate blog post. He went on to say, when you take the art of retailing and you keep it people-led and tech-powered, that's where the magic happens. It's powerful when you get the balance right. End quote. And
yes,
if you remember, I think this was on our show with A&M just last month.
It was.
Or recently, within the last couple months anyway, we poo-pooed innovation centers with them on a recent show. Does the fact that Sam's Club is doing it make you think any differently about this latest innovation effort?
I feel kind of bad, Chris. I feel like we're dogging on Target and Sam's Club today, which are
I don't know that I'm dogging on Sam's Club. You might be, but I don't think I am.
I am. Well, I already teased it, but I'm a big believer in the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. This is something again where I would like to talk to the team at Sam's Club to learn more about why they made this decision.
Why they thought they needed it. That's a good
question. What wasn't working with the previous method? What are they hoping to do in a separate environment, removed from the actual customers in the store that they couldn't do or they couldn't test in real life in front of real customers? It seems like it's been such a, like when we talked to Eddie Garcia back in the day about, you know, testing concierge, Sam's Club concierge, you know, delivery to curbside services that they deployed in 6 days. Like, such a key component of that was like the team was living in that house across the street from the store so they could run over back and forth and like test this in real time. And so I guess I just am very curious, like, why are we going away from that? And most importantly, like, Sam's Club's team is brilliant. The product team is brilliant. And I worry that when you put them in a separate innovation center that's now labeled innovation, not like actual product deployment in store, that the funds and resources for those teams could disappear really quickly. You and I know that this can happen in an innovation center. So
yes, exhibit A, and exhibit A.
Those are my concerns. Sam's Club is really smart. It's a bunch of really smart people though. So I feel like there's gotta be a reason behind it. I just need to know more.
Wow. That was a hell of a good answer, Ann. God,
what are you?
Like,
what, you don't
almost,
agree with me, though.
I'm almost speechless. No, I mean, you might have literally convinced me that, yeah, this might not be worth it. I'll give the contrarian argument right now,
which is what I was
prepared to do. But I think you're bringing up some really compelling points on you know, why it might not be a good idea in the long run. And I want to preface this by saying, I firmly believe and have written this multiple times that in Forbes, that Sam's Club is the most innovative grocery in America, not named Amazon. Yeah. And I believe that. And I know you do too. So here's the reason that I could like the idea. There is an element of prototyping before the prototyping, you know, and by that, I mean, you need a space to prototype before you prototype in store. And so if I look at Sam's Club, who has a track record of doing innovation from a business-led standpoint so well, as you discussed, they are one of the rare exceptions where I think they have the pedigree that gets me to support the idea of prototyping before the prototyping.
Yeah.
So for that reason, I can get on board with it. But to your point, for it to work, the ultimate goals have to stay rooted in the business, and you can't let this design thinking studio start chasing innovation for innovation's sake, and you start getting all off into left field and spending all kinds of money on crazy things that are never going to see the light of day. It has to be almost, for it to work, in my mind, as I'm thinking about this on the fly, given what you said, it has to be that. It has to be prototyping before the prototyping. It has to be business-led, and that has to be the goal of it, I think. And so for that reason, I think if you could do it, it can work. But, you know, again, last word to you on this one.
I mean, I'll just say this. A 37,000 square foot building is a giant number on the line item. Okay. Yeah. And that is
a giant line item in the budget. Yes.
Right. Yeah. It's like, it's just a major concern for me that stuff like the brilliance of these teams that they're creating could get cut in one foul swoop. And yes, they know how to go back to it. They know how to be agile and make it work. But it's just like how much distraction is there from both a cost standpoint and from the teams and resources. But we will talk to Sam's Club, I'm sure, in no time and get more information.
100%. Yeah, we're gonna have to get Mr. Garner on the show with us. You know, we've had two predecessors on the show with us, and no doubt they're listening too. And I can't wait to hear the feedback. But I thought that was a very well handled conversation that we had about a move that they're making. So great job.
I hope they feel the same.
I hope they feel the same way.
All right. Headline number five, Chris. Whole Foods is set to debut a new small format store. According to Grocery Dive, Whole Foods Market announced Monday that it's debuting a new small format store aimed at providing urban neighborhood residents with a quick, convenient shopping experience. The first Whole Foods Market daily shop will launch in New York City, and the specialty grocer plans to bring the format to other cities across the country. Whole Foods Market daily shops will range between 7 and 14,000 square feet, about a quarter to half the size of a Whole Foods traditional 40,000 square foot store. Whole Foods Market daily shops will also be equipped with Amazon One, Amazon's Palm Payment service at self-checkout kiosks, as well as at traditional checkout counters, a spokesperson for the grocer confirmed via email. Chris, we just returned from some store visits last week in Phoenix, or in Surprise, Arizona, actually.
Yeah, let's technically Surprise, Arizona, which is
specifically clear.
Not even a suburb.
Yes. But what are your thoughts of these smaller format Whole Foods going up against the likes of Trader Joe's or Sprouts?
Yeah, I'm going to be a little more critical on this one.
Okay.
You know, I like and here's what I say. I'm a little conflicted on this one too, but I like the idea.
Yeah.
I just think it's really hard for Amazon to get it right.
Okay.
And I say that because, I say that because it seems like they're overtly trying to take a page out of Sprouts' book and even Foxtrot Market's book and how the success that they've seen. So, you know, as you mentioned, we saw Sprouts firsthand in Surprise, Arizona, technically, you know, when we were in Phoenix. And we saw one of their newest stores, and they've been blowing the doors off sales-wise since going to a smaller format design. And I think that design, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's roughly in the range of 20 to 25,000 square feet.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and this store is even a little bit smaller than that, as they're talking about it. So, and the other point I would bring up is the space is really crowded. So you've got those two players, but Trader Joe's is part of this too. Mm-hmm. So, and Amazon and Whole Foods haven't shown me the ability to merchandise things in a compelling way, really, since Amazon acquired Whole Foods.
Okay. So
I think you got them going into a crowded space without the merchandising chops of how to do this, really, since taking it over. So I think while it looks good as a business strategy on paper,
yeah,
the money is going to be in the execution. And that's where I question them, given the success that Sprouts and others are already seeing in this space. And it's another trip too. Like, and all these grocers will admit they're not the primary trip, right?
Yeah.
They're the secondary trip. And the secondary trip is already really crowded. In addition to Whole Foods, I put Whole Foods, the major regular store, into that equation too. So it's a crowded space. I think it's going to be hard to pull off. I think you might disagree with me though, based on the look on your face.
I kind of do. So I actually, I spoke to Peyton Begora from Grocery Dive, who broke this story. I spoke to her yesterday and I was talking about this, and I think there's a lot of potential here. I don't disagree with some of the challenges.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that either.
I don't disagree with that for the reasons that you mentioned, where like the Amazon Whole Foods relationship is still broken. Like there still needs to be some like cohesion happening between those two, that satisfies the Whole Foods customer. But I think this is smart because of a few reasons. One, it allows them to test, refine, and grow Amazon technology in grocery in several different formats. They don't have to worry about the actual grocery product that they're doing this with. So this is not like an Amazon Fresh concept where there wasn't the value or the brand equity that Whole Foods has. I think you also are starting to look at what's being merchandised in these stores. And when you think about, especially the smaller, 7,000 square feet stores, like there's so much throughput in just grab and go and like day of food, like using this as a lunch destination, especially when you start to think about where this puts Amazon or where this puts Whole Foods, which can be at the bottom of condo buildings across the street from, offices downtown in downtown or urban cores. So I really like that for those reasons in particular. And lastly, one thing that we don't talk about here is that this also provides more urban nodes in the Amazon network. So in addition to having a great option for grab and go food, you also have Amazon store pickup. You have other options for a smaller, like a smaller access point to get Amazon closer to its customers, closer for grocery delivery for Whole Foods and all these other things. So I think there's more to it than just the core, like we're creating a 7,000 square foot Whole Foods, but you disagree with me.
Yeah, I'll take the last word on this one, but yeah. I do disagree with you because I think those are all the arguments one could have made about Amazon Fresh too. And
but you don't have the quality of the produce.
You don't.
Amazon Fresh's stuff was not good.
You don't. Whole Foods knows how to merchandise a store better. But I think part and parcel, you ask anyone, is Whole Foods merchandised as well, equally or worse, following the acquisition of Amazon? I think most people would say not as well. At least that's what I'm hearing.
We haven't
on the
seen
street.
This format though either. Like
we haven't seen the format. Yes, I agree. And the point about, but I think it's the same argument of like, yes, there's all these things that could happen, but there's one thing that has to happen before any of them are true. It has to be a great grocery experience. That is what has to happen for it to work. The tech, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it could be cool, but we haven't seen it yet. It's kind of just out there as like Amazon has that capability. Hasn't worked in Fresh. It hasn't been a trip driver for the most part. Now, maybe that'll change over time. I don't know, but it's just a really crowded space to do well. You have to do it better than Sprouts. You have to do it better than Trader Joe's. You have to do it better than even the Whole Foods down the street or the Foxtrot. Mm-hmm. So like, I don't know. That's the point I'd make in closing. I don't know.
Let's go see it for sure.
Let's
go try it out. And then I think we should revisit this because I have high hopes.
Yeah, it's in New York, right? We can go when we go to Commerce Next in June, mm-hmm. right?
Perfect.
Plug for Commerce Next. Join us there.
Right. Let's go to the lightning round, Chris. Question number one, Qatar Airlines just announced that they're testing an AI flight assistant that'll begin trialing on March 8th, 2024. What's one thing that you think an AI flight assistant will have more difficulty doing than a human?
This one's so easy for me. Understanding my voice.
I
have not found an AI system yet that can understand what the hell I'm saying to it.
Are you serious?
I'm 100% serious. And like, no one can ever understand my voice. I think it's because I speak in like kind of a low muffled like tone and it can never understand me. That's why I'm always talking so loudly on these things too, because I'm trying to enunciate every single word and trying to watch my diction.
No but wonder
when I'm talking
to
an AI device, like, it's like, I'm not going to do that. You should just freaking understand my vocal pattern.
No wonder you didn't get carted going into a bar in Phoenix. They were just like, old man, he's yelling into his phone again.
Coming through, old man. Yes, that's a great story. And thank you for bringing that up. Yes, I was the only one carted of like 70 people going into a bar.
No, not carted. You were the only one.
Not carted. Yes, not carted. Thank you for clarifying. Not carted going into. The guy's just like, yeah, you're good. Come on. Just gave me the finger.
You were in good company. They didn't card me either. So it wasn't.
Yeah, but that was only because I set the precedent. All right, let's keep rolling. And another bonehead CEO move. Kellogg, I forgot about this one. Kellogg's CEO recently encouraged Americans to eat cereal for dinner as a low-cost meal replacement. And when was the last time you ate cereal for dinner?
I did eat cereal for dinner on vacation with my kids a couple weeks ago. But to be fair, like, we ended up eating again like 2 hours later because it was not enough to sustain us for the entire evening.
Which cereal did you eat?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch, obviously. Oh, shout out again to Carter Jensen and the General Mills team. Yeah. Best cereal.
Nice. I've never had that, actually. Do you know that? I've never had that. I've never eaten it.
Oh, no. My God. Wait till you try it. We're going to film it and we'll send it to General Mills.
I'm not a cereal guy. Yeah. All right.
So good. All right. Lowe's is giving $140 million in end of year employee bonuses in addition to money based on your experience in the field. Do you think cash is enough? What else would you give as a year-end bonus to those working in the store?
Yeah, from my experience working in the field, cash is 100% enough. And the question is it enough? And the question I would raise having read the announcement. I actually wonder if the bonuses are high enough. We don't have time to go into detail on that, but I think yes, cash is king. That's what drives the incentives at that level, 100%. All right, last one. Mucinex has released a new online game called the Mucus Masher. Where gamers can mash Mr. Mucus, the brand mascot of Mucinex. This is great. What is your most embarrassing nose blowing or snot story?
Oh my God, we're going even deeper into this. I'm like seriously shivering from.
We can
just
go as deep as you
them.
Want to go.
Oh God,
how deep does one go into one's nose?
I guess. I don't even know. Like, the closest thing I can think of was one time when I was playing hockey in high school. I was not feeling well and I sneezed, and I remember having like snot hanging from like the cage of my face. So gross. Oh God, it makes me so gross out to even think about it. But
oh, I bet every hockey player's had that happen too. All right. Oh my God. Gross. That's a great mental image to leave everyone with. But I've got better mental images for you, because we're gonna give a shout out today for happy birthday to Rob Reiner, Connie Britton, and to the man who taught us to show no mercy and to always sweep the leg, the sensei of the original Cobra Kai dojo himself, the great Martin Cove, who I'm sure Anne is very familiar with if I told you the name of that actor. And remember, if you could only read or listen to one retail blog in the business, make it OmniTalk, the only retail media outlet run by two former executives from a current top 10 U.S. retailer. Our Fast Five podcast is the quickest, fastest rundown of all the week's top news, and our daily newsletter, the Retail Daily Minute, tells you all you need to know each day to stay on top of your game as a retail executive, and also regularly features special content that is exclusive to us and that Ann and I take pride in doing just for you. Thanks as always for listening in. Please remember to like and leave us a review wherever you happen to listen to your podcast or on YouTube. You can follow us today by simply going to youtube.com/OmniTalkRetail, and watching our videos is the best way to absorb our content each and every week, as much as we love this being our 1,000th podcast episode. So on behalf of Ann, myself, and all of us at OmniTalk Retail, as always, be careful out there.
The OmniTalk Retail Fast Five is brought to you in association with the A&M Consumer and Retail Group. The A&M Consumer and Retail Group is a management consulting firm that tackles the most complex challenges and advances its clients, people, and communities toward their maximum potential. CRG brings the experience, tools, and operator-like pragmatism to help retailers and consumer products companies be on the right side of disruption. and Avalara. Avalara makes tax compliance faster, easier, more accurate, and more reliable for 30,000 plus businesses and government customers in over 90 countries. Avalara leverages 1,200 plus signed partner integrations to power tax calculations, document management, tax return filing, and tax content access. Visit avalara.com to improve your compliance journey. And Wiliot. Wiliot's ambient IoT visibility platform powered by battery-free Bluetooth tags eliminates scanning for real-time end-to-end inventory visibility. For more information, head to wiliot.com/omnitalk. And TGW. Revolutionize your grocery supply chain with TGW. Their experts tailor automation solutions to your needs, ensuring you have the edge. Work with TGW before your competition does. Discover more at tgw-group.com. And Sezzle. Sezzle is an innovative buy now, pay later solution that allows shoppers to split purchases into 4 interest-free payments over 6 weeks. To learn more, visit sezzle.com.